Chapter 28. The Rainsdark Diversion. The day passed with the haste and ease of an academy exam. Brannis, Soria, and Rikashi retreated deeper into the forest in case woodsmen from the village happened to venture out their way. They had run out their supply of food and ate only some wild blueberries that they found. Nothing else in their vicinity seemed edible. Brannis passed the day with Lord Harwick's notes spread out on the forest floor, held down by rocks to protect them from mischievous breezes. "We're raiding the larder," Soria said after an hour's silence. She sat slumped against a rock that was the size of a pig and nearly as clean, craned her neck back with a horse blanket beneath her head, and stared up into the cloud-spattered sky. "I can go check for fish again," Rikashi replied. He had sat cross-legged in the sun for hours without moving, eyes closed.
"No, it's nearly sundown," Soria answered. "I don't want to do this on a full stomach."
"I'd eat," Brannis said, not looking up from his studies. "At this point, I'd fight my way in there with avalanche in one hand and a turkey leg in the other." "Very well," Rikashi said. He rose stiffly, stretched his limbs, and left in the direction of the stream where they had filled their skins that morning.
"Brannis, there were no fish in that stream this morning, and there were no fish when we looked again a few hours ago,"
Soria said once Rikashi was out of earshot. "Probably not," Brannis admitted, "but I wanted to talk to you a moment without Rikashi around." Soria sat up and cast a suspicious look at Brannis.
"Oh?"
"Where did you find Rikashi's twin?" Brannis asked.
"I told you that story," Soria replied. "He was friends with Zell already when I joined up with them."
"No, in Vaedrus. You two were together aboard the Starlit Marauder. Where did you pick him up?"
"I'm no cartographer. We were somewhere over northern Cadran, somewhere in the low hills."
She looked away, keeping Brannis just in the edge of her vision. Brannis tossed out one of the cases of notes in her direction. She caught it without turning. "Something odd is going on. Humor me and learn the spells in that one," Brannis told her. "This chicken stew smells like fish." Brannis immediately regretted the food analogy, reminding himself of how good either a fish or a chicken stew would fill his stomach.
"What are they?" Soria asked.
She was already prying open the end of the cylinder. "The best of the war spells I found, just in case fists and daggers aren't enough."
"Why send Rikashi away for that?" she asked,
and stopped trying to retrieve the notes.
"Besides, I don't go in for that sort of thing. Last thing I need is to be thought a witch and hunted down by half the twin-born in Tellurak, or shunned by every one-worlder who finds out."
"This isn't going to be a quiet sneak and run, Soria. There are going to be folks who see magic tonight and live to tell," Brannis said.
"You did the Rashan thing," Soria chided him. "Stop that."
Brannis cocked his head.
"You just answered one half of what I said and pretended I didn't say the other half."
"Sorry," Brannis said. "It's getting to be a habit, I suppose." Soria set her jaw and crossed her arms. "Fine, fine, I know. I just did it again. Why didn't I want Rikashi here? I've been starting to wonder about him."
"Not this again, Brannis."
"Hear me out. We all know he's Safshan, a part of the Magrin Alliance. I think he might have been there in Mune. He might know who killed Iridan. Maybe it was even him. Have you noticed his penchant for beheading his opponents? It might just be part of the Blade Priest philosophy of fighting."
"Can't say I've noticed it, really," Soria said.
"Come now, on the docks in Scar Harbor, he must have beheaded 4 of those thugs," Brannis pressed.
"Fine, maybe he did, but I've fought with him for years and never noticed. It's not like he's a headsman in his free time. Maybe it was just something about the way those vermin fought that put the idea in him."
"Ask him."
"Ask him what? Rikashi, Brannis thinks you killed my husband. Did you?"
"No way," Soria replied. "And if you get any ideas about asking him, save them until we're back in Scar Harbor, safe with those 2 noble whelps." "Thomas is several years older than either of us," Brannis retorted. Soria opened her mouth but closed it again. She took a few breaths and in that time seemed to have decided not to follow Brannis down the game trail he had just wandered into.
I'll study these if you can keep your curiosity in your head until we're back in Scar Harbor, Soria offered.
Vengeance only works until you get it. Right, Grandfather?
Deal.
Rakashi's fish were the stuff of legends. He could have painted such a picture in your mind that you started to imagine you had seen them yourself, except they had never existed. The stream was as devoid of fish as it had been all of the other times they had checked. By nightfall, despite having blueberry-stained teeth, they hungered still. They left the horses tethered before they departed. Were they to fail or flee by some other route, the beasts would be at the mercy of forest wanderers to save them. The horses accepted their fate with either an admirable, stoic devotion or an utter lack of comprehension. Their map had been drawn in the dirt with a dagger. Soria had drawn the locations where Abile and Thomas were being kept, as well as the layout of the corridors and the rooms of the lower floors. It even showed, for his own benefit, Brannis knew, the location of the servants' quarters. They waited near the edge of the tree line for darkness to deepen about them. The sky held clouds enough to aid their efforts, but the wind played pranks with the moon like a street grifter, shuffling the clouds about to hide and reveal it in turns. It was Soria's word on which they waited, hers being the definitive opinion on matters of skullduggery.
Now, she whispered.
She had judged that the cloud cover would last long enough for their harrowed run from the trees to the shadows at the base of the keep's walls, and took off like a startled hare, ether making her gait fast and effortless. Rakashi followed behind, his boots crunching softly on the grassy field. Behind him, Brannis clattered like a discordant wind chime in heavy plate armor. The blanket thrown about his shoulders to muffle the sound was insufficient. The guards heard them, but without sufficient light to see by, neither arrow nor musket shot sought them out. A common cry arose from the battlements, echoed across the keep. Brannis learned the Keshi word for intruder by their shouts. Soria knew that Rakashi and Brannis had fallen far behind, but it did not matter. Her destination differed from theirs, as did her mission. It felt odd rushing off to a battle in her skulking garb, but it was not a battle she intended to partake in. She made a line for one of the square towers off to the right, where she knew that the Akkardians were being housed, if not outright held prisoner. The ground was uneven, an untamed pasture dotted with gopher holes and rabbit warrens. It was all Soria could manage to keep her footing as she made her approach. While Brannis and Rakashi tromped along like a pair of monohorns drawing the attention of the whole keep, she heard no sign that she had been spotted. The tower jutted from the keep like a wart, leaving an interior corner that promised to make her ascent a simple matter. Old stonework presented a ladder of handholds, ancient rock worn away by wind and rain to crumble just enough at joints to fit a slender hand or boot toe. Up, up she climbed, managing to keep her grip as the structure shook. She panicked that the whole of the tower might tumble, but it had stood hundreds of years and seemed determined to hold on for at least one more night. Soria paused at the window to check the ether. She peered into the room before her to see one form inside, another form in what should have been the next room over, and a half dozen gathered outside.
Abile, Thomas, and a knot of guards. Workable.
Soria pulled herself up onto the window ledge, thankful that it was open on the warm, breezy night. There were candles lit within, revealing a room that hinted at captives who led pampered lives. Silk bedspreads, a rug-like tapestry, multiple wardrobes, and a dressing table with a mirror. Fortunately, that mirror also had no one looking at it from within the room. Thomas Harwick sat on the edge of his bed, staring at the door with his hands worrying at one another. He was dressed in a nightshirt and cap, neither of which was much as far as travel gear. Soria dropped into the room with a feather's impact. The fine rug devoured what little sound she might otherwise have made. She kept low, taking herself from the mirror's domain, lest her oblivious target decide to develop a proper sense of self-preservation on a whim. She flopped down onto the bed behind Thomas, one hand taking him by the throat, the other covering nose and mouth. She pulled him down backward onto the bed.
Shut up, Her lips brushed his ear as she whispered. She smelled the perfumed oils from his hairs that brushed her nose.
"This is Lady Soria. Your father sent us to rescue you. The Keshi are using you as a pawn. Quit struggling and I'll let you breathe."
Thomas's initial panic might not have faded. She could still feel him trembling. But he calmed himself enough to convince her to uncover at least his nose. He drew quick, sucking breaths, craning his head back to look at her. She pulled back and let him. He had fish eyes, wide, lidless, and lacking recognition.
"We're leaving," she said, leaning close once more. "You need to dress as quiet as you can. Not a word, not a sound. Don't bother bringing trinkets or trifles. If you cry out for help thinking that I'm the one you should be fearful of, rest assured I will cut your tongue out and leave it behind. Do you understand?"
She took his tiny, spasmodic shakes as a nod of assent and released him. The first thing he did upon sitting was to point to the adjoining wall. Soria rolled her eyes, then nodded.
"No, we came all this way to leave her behind because you were just so important. If Brannis wasn't still half-twisted for that little she-cow you proposed to, I think we'd have all given your father condolences instead of chasing after you."
She leaned close to his ear once more.
"I need you to put pants and a tunic on, find some shoes, and climb down a rope for me. I'm not moving on to get the girl until you've done all that. So if you want her out of danger, then move."
Yelling in a whisper was such a frustrating state of affairs. She wanted to shout her lungs bloody to wake the sodden noodle of a noble son from his daze. While Thomas struggled into his previous day's garments with the grace of a first-night thespian, Soria set about securing the escape portion of the escape. The coil of rope she kept looped around her shoulder pooled to the floor at her feet. She took one of her daggers and lined it up with a joint in the masonry below the window. Pausing, she closed her eyes and blocked out the distraction of a half-clad Thomas, struggling to dress himself in haste. In one smooth motion, she struck the pommel of the dagger with the heel of her hand, driving it in between the stone blocks. One end of the rope was already prepared, tied in a miniature noose. She looped it about the hilt of the dagger and dropped the other end out the window. She turned to watch Thomas dressing, receiving nervous, self-conscious looks for her troubles. Soria also caught a good look at herself in the mirror and realized it might not have been solely her gender that was causing him difficulty. She reached up under her hood and untied it, pulled it back and smiled at him. He nodded, appearing reassured in some measure, and finished pulling on the breeches over his hose. As he hopped into his boots, Soria dragged Thomas to the window and pointed down. He peered out, then abruptly withdrew his head back into the room, shaking it violently. Soria pointed to him, then down once more. Thomas pointed to the dagger, then to the door, punctuating his alternate suggestion with a slashing motion across his throat. Soria shook her head. She pointed down. Thomas looked out once more cautiously this time. He did not pull away, but looked helplessly up at Soria. She took hold of one of his arms, grasping it about the bicep. He shook his head again, slumping down against the wall.
"I could just throw him out. Say he fell."
Soria breathed through gritted teeth and began pulling up the rope. She tied it about Thomas's waist, perhaps a bit tighter than it needed to be, and leaned in again to whisper in his ear.
"Last chance. I lower you down, but I can't hold your whole weight. You're going to walk down the outside wall, holding onto the rope. Otherwise, we're leaving you both here," she whispered.
Soria hoped that the girl's safety was incentive enough to motivate him. Thomas nodded, perhaps longer than he needed to for his agreement to be known. He eased himself up onto the ledge and turned around. Soria saw that his eyes were closed. She also saw that every muscle in his body was rigid, as rigid as a scrawny, flimsy puff of a man as Thomas could get. Soria took up her end of the rope and tried not to envision the disaster that seemed likely to follow. After Thomas's first steps, Soria lost sight of him. She leaned back, foot braced against the wall, aware of Thomas solely by the enormous dead weight straining on the rope.
"Rakashi should be doing this. He could have made that climb."
She played out another arm's length of rope.
Brannis could just have carried him down.
She paused to catch her breath, knowing that holding it was just making the pain in her arms worse.
Why did I have to be the one up here?
Brannis watched Soria until he lost sight of her around a corner of the keep. Twice on the way to the wall, he had tripped and had to pick himself up. Rakashi kept on running ahead of him, though it did the Tikalish warrior little good to arrive early. They headed not for the front entrance, nor for the rear, both of which were likely being reinforced as they approached, but instead headed for the side of the keep, guarded by nothing more than flower beds and some evergreen shrubs trimmed to look like animals. Brannis reached the wall, batting his way past a verdant unicorn, to find Rakashi pressed against the side of the keep, waiting for him. There were no windows on that side of the keep below the third floor.
"Stand aside," Brannis said, keeping his voice low.
Rakashi stepped back 2 paces.
"More than that."
Rakashi scrambled away several more. Avalanche slid from its sheath. Brannis thrust it through the keep wall as if it had been made of paper and not granite blocks as thick as barrels. He swept the blade back and forth, carving a rough doorway. The keep shook as it settled, a bit less stable than it had been a moment before. Brannis remembered to sweep aside the rubble to the point where he and Rakashi did not need to climb over anything. They had entered a storeroom, just where Soria's map said it should be. It appeared well-stocked, but it had recently been devastated by flying debris from a shattered exterior wall. The door out to the halls beyond was shut, and may or may not have been locked. One swipe of Avalanche took the door from its hinges, along with much of the wall those hinges had attached to.
"Remember," Brannis called back, "keep behind me. I don't think fancy blade work will stop a musket."
"You just mind that your armor's protection does not last forever," Rakashi replied.
They advanced, their steps echoing on bare stone floors, blades ready, into the halls of the keep. Ensconced torches lit their way.
"Around the next corner," Rakashi warned.
His ether vision made him invaluable in the twisting corridors they were invading. Brannis hesitated a moment, discordant with the knowledge that his armor ought to protect him against anything short of cannon fire in Tellurak. He peeked around the corner and saw 6 men armed with muskets, 3 standing behind 3 down on 1 knee, all aimed down toward their end of the corridor. Brannis was spotted, and reflex pulled his head back behind cover. One of the Keshis shouted something in their own language. Brannis looked over his shoulder.
"Nothing to concern yourself with," Rakashi told him in lieu of translation.
"Shall we?"
"Tell them to surrender," Brannis said.
"We give them a chance first. They can't possibly know what they are facing." Rakashi shrugged, then shouted back. A long string of foreign noises that Brannis could not even dissect into distinct words.
"So much for learning that new word."
The Keshis hollered back a reply.
"They are biding time, and I just saw why," Rakashi said. "We have another group coming from the other side. We will be caught between them in a moment. I think our time is now."
Brannis nodded. He took a breath to steel himself and put an arm up to shield his face. He knew not how well the demonic helm of Liad's armor would protect the exposed skin there, if it would at all. He shouted,
"Charge!"
and rounded the corner, Avalanche at the ready.
Crack, 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 crack.
The muskets' reports were deafening in closed quarters, but the worst pain they delivered was to the ears. Brannis felt impacts like dirt clods, not lead balls. He dropped his arm to see a cloud of smoke around the musketeers. Shock registered on their faces as they saw that their volley had not stopped Brannis, nor even slowed him. The ones who had stood were already turning to run. The ones who had knelt were scrambling to join them. Brannis caught up with 2 of the latter and dispatched them with a single swipe of Avalanche. He took off after the rest. Brannis spared a glance over his shoulder, but saw no sign of Rakashi. Over the shouts and screaming that had overwhelmed the ambient sounds of the keep, he could hear blades ringing back the way he had come. Brannis turned and retraced his charge. He barreled around the corner at a run, nearly colliding with Rakashi, coming the opposite way. On the ground lay four men in sleeveless leather armor, the same style Soria wore. All had carried sword and buckler. One was cut nearing in half across the belly. Another was missing his head. The camaraderie that Brennus had felt in the heady rush of combat sank for a moment, lodging itself in his bowels, before bobbing back to rest once more in his heart. There was no time for reminiscence or mourning.
"Not Tezuan," Rakashi said by way of explanation. "Lead on."
Brennus nodded, saving his breath for running.
"We should find the kitchen or the larder," Rakashi reminded Brennus. "We may be days in our flight before we reach a safe city."
They passed the slaughtered musketeers and headed off in search of the rest of the keep's defenders. The corridors were empty. There were no other pockets of resistance to be found. Brennus looked to Rakashi, who shrugged. Brennus opened a pair of double doors, reducing them to splinters with a long back-and-forth sweep of avalanche. He strode through and into the main room of the keep, with vaulted ceilings that rose the entire four stories of the fortress's height. He saw nothing, save a room set with long dining tables and a raised terrace with a single, lonely table atop it. The table was set for dinner, with two chairs. One was occupied.
"Sir Brennus, please enter," the chair's occupant called out.
She was fair-skinned, clearly Southern Keshi, with an accent to her Akkadian to match. Brennus held a hand out behind him, warning Rakashi to stay back. Soria's arms burned. Every muscle, stoically silent during Thomas's descent, now found time to voice a protest over working conditions of late. Her hands had worked themselves into claws, still trying to hold tight to the rope that was no longer within their grasp. She shook them out, wondering how she was going to manage to finish her assignment.
"You best not have been spending your captivity stuffing yourself with sweets, peasant girl."
Soria looked out the window. She watched as Thomas fumbled with the knot at his waist. He looked unable to get it loosened enough to untie. Soria reached for the second of her daggers, aimed with care, resisted the temptation, then aimed again away from Thomas, and struck the dagger into the ground near his feet. Startled though he was, Thomas had sense enough to take it up and cut himself free of the rope. Soria hauled the rest of the rope up as quickly as she could, then pulled her dagger free from the stonework. Or tried. Even telekinesis was not enough to yank it free. She leafed through a mental catalog of spells. She tried one for melting stone into mud, but nothing happened. She tried to turn the dagger insubstantial, but to no avail. She shook her head, regretting the loss of the weapon she had ruined herself. She did not have time to fool with it any longer. She took up the cut end of the rope and climbed out the window. It certainly looked a long way down to where Thomas stood below, gawking up at her, hand pressed over his mouth. She stood on the window ledge and hopped up, catching hold of the roof and hauling herself up. Her arms protested, but thanked her for only having to support her own familiar weight. Soria made her way around the top of the tower to the side where Abile's window ought to have been. She hung her head over the edge and adjusted her aim, then climbed back down over the edge. She dropped the last foot, landing on the ledge and quickly hooking an arm around inside before her tenuous balance failed her. A shriek fit to shatter crystal greeted her arrival. Swearing mentally, Soria pulled herself into the room, stealth cast aside in favor of urgency, barely remembering to keep hold of the rope. She saw Abile sitting up in bed, covers pulled up to her chin, mouth agape, emitting that inhuman sound. Soria leaped onto the bed and smothered Abile with her hand.
"Quiet,"
Soria whispered in the girl's ear, somehow surprised to have found her no more stalwart than her lover.
"It's me, Lady Soria. I've no time to explain, but we've got to leave now."
"Lady Abile," a voice called from outside the door in accented Akkadian. "What is wrong?"
"Gut me." "Tell them you saw a mouse,"
Soria whispered. She let go Abile's mouth.
I thought I saw a mouse," Abile said.
"Good little parrot."
Soria used her free hand to begin reeling in the length of rope.
"I will come in and see to it," the voice replied.
"No,"
Soria shouted. Her eyes went wide. She had not meant to say that aloud. Thinking fast, she pointed to her outfit, then to Abelay. She mouthed the words, "not dressed." Abelay gave her a puzzled, frightened look. There was a sound of a key working at a lock. Soria halved the distance between them and whispered it.
"You're not dressed."
"I'm not dressed," Abelay called out. "Give me a moment." The sound of the lock stopped.
"Of course, my lady," the voice assured them. "Please, let me know when I might enter."
Soria did not leave the dressing task to chance, as she had with Thomas. She tore through Abelay's wardrobe for something roadworthy, settling on leather riding trousers and a green bodice. She was relieved to find the girl had riding boots as well. Soria was no expert at fashion, but she was at least knowledgeable about the fittings and lacings of women's clothing. She helped Abelay into the outfit she had picked for her. She noted as she did so that she still wore the little jade dragon pendant that Kairos had given her, and wondered what that boded for Thomas.
"Lady Abelay," the voice called from outside again. "Are you quite well? What is the delay?"
Soria's eyes searched the room. It was furnished just like Thomas's had been. She found a wardrobe that looked near enough and put a shoulder to it. It was massive and merely rocked a bit before settling back down with a thud.
"I'm coming in. Cover yourself, Lady Abelay."
Soria waved frantically for Abelay to come aid her. The peasant girl weighed a little more than she did and was hardly fit for brute labor, but their combined heft was enough to topple the wardrobe sidelong in front of the door.
"Let's go,"
Soria said to Abelay, all pretense of deception and stealth abandoned.
"Thomas is waiting below."
Abelay looked to the window, the rope, and to Soria. The fear in her eyes told of a grand epiphany about their method of escape. Abelay shook her head with fervor.
"I can't."
"I didn't think you could. I'm taking us both," Soria said, hoping that her confidence would find full support from her weary arms.
"One arm over my shoulder, the other under my left arm. Lock your wrists, like this," Soria demonstrated. "Don't put both around my neck or I'll choke and we'll both fall. Got it?"
Abelay nodded. Soria pulled up all the slack in the rope and climbed onto the ledge, offering Abelay her back.
"Merciful Tansha, don't let me drop us."
The peasant girl followed Soria's instructions, attempting to crush her collarbone, but thankfully lacking the strength to do so. Soria wrapped the rope around a wrist and gripped it tight. She turned and worked Abelay out through the opening, and over empty air. She heard the sharp intake of air from just behind her, and soft whimpering. The door to Abelay's room opened a crack, but stopped fast when it hit the wardrobe.
"Lady Abelay, what is going on?" the voice from outside shouted.
The door closed a bit, then slammed open again. Soria took that as ample cue to leave. The rope was still anchored in Thomas's room, running from his window and around the corner. Pulled taut, it stretched horizontally.
"Hold tight," Soria warned. "The first part will be the hardest."
Soria stepped off the window ledge, and the two women swung like a pendulum, Soria scrambling for her feet to keep up. She managed to stop herself at the corner, and was nearly pulled around the corner by Abelay's weight, yanking her by the neck. Abelay shrieked again.
"Ow! Stop that! You're right in my ear," Soria scolded.
"Abelay!"
Thomas cried out from below.
"Oh, Thomas!"
she called back to him. Soria felt Abelay's legs squirming against her own, trying to hook around them.
"Stop that too! I need those to get us down," Soria yelled.
She took a step around the corner, as much to free herself from Abelay's panicked grasping as to advance their descent. She put both feet to the side with Thomas's window and swung again, more gently that time. After that, it was all Soria could do to release the rope to slide them down one step at a time. Her arms were nearly spent. They would happily lock in place for her, but they protested every motion. Soria felt Abelay sliding.
"Just hold on," Soria encouraged her.
She tried to lend a hand to help Abelay refresh her grip, but knew as soon as she tried to loosen her hold on the rope that they would both fall. One arm was not nearly enough. Slick with sweat from fear, Abelay's wrist slipped apart.
Soria turned and tried to grab her with a silent telekinetic spell. Abile's source, happy, healthy, stupid thing that it was, shrugged her off like it was greased, instead of allowing the magic to save her. Soria turned her head and squeezed her eyes shut. Twin screams of terror rose from the throats of Thomas and Abile, but only Thomas's persisted. Soria turned to look, and saw Abile sprawled motionless in the grass.
"Who are you?" Brannis replied, shouting across the dining hall. "What have you done with Thomas Harwick and Abile Tillman?"
"My name is Lady Lerna Skull, and I imagine you have puzzled out the rest. I had not expected you to storm my keep with such effective force, I admit. Your ploy got me to send my best men out to ride you down. However," Lady Skull snapped her fingers. From the balconies on the upper floors, musketeers appeared in numbers Soria had underestimated. There had to have been at least 30 of them. "I still have quite a number left here," Lady Skull finished.
"What then? You laid this trap out for me, and invited me to fall into it. What sort of fool do you think I am?" Brannis asked.
"You are here, are you not?" said Lady Skull. "Even if half my men miss their mark, you will be slaughtered. You are in the trap even now. Your friends, I care not. They may flee if they like. You are the only one that matters."
"What is the bargain?" "There has to be a bargain to be had here," Brannis insisted. "I'm no value to you in this world. We both know that."
"This is not a conversation to be shouted across a room," Lady Skull said. "Come, leave your sword and join me for dinner." She waved a hand to the seat across from her. "The hour is late, but I can have the kitchen staff roused."
"Not a chance," Brannis replied. "If you want to talk, then talk, but there's no way I leave myself unarmed. You made a mistake in thinking you can take the upper hand so easily."
"You pretend you are the great Kyrus Hinterdale, fearsome sorcerer. I know better. There is no shielding spell that will save you from those muskets that point at you. No fiery conflagration to consume us. You are just an ordinary Cadran knight, a long way from home, Sir Brannis," said Lady Skull. She laced her fingers together and held them beneath her chin. Brannis watched her smile slide wide, never revealing teeth.
"Who else are you?" Brannis demanded.
He asked in Cadran, not quite ready to trust his words in front of even doomed men, and he was not sure just how many of the men above fit that description. "I am Princess Xian, heir to the throne of Gelk. I will have your aid in ending the war in return for your life," Lady Skull said. "You may accomplish such a thing however you like, but you will be remaining in Kesh under my protection to ensure the peace continues."
"I see. Princess Xian, you are already dead," Brannis countered. "Rashan Solaran killed a Gelkan princess, and I believe there was only one. You bargain from a position of ignorance. I could promise you anything, and you would have to find someone else to tell you truth or lie. The war might be over, or Gelk a scorched ruin for all you know. However, it is neither at the moment. Your friend Captain Zane has set you on this course to stop Rashan through me, but he has taken matters in hand himself in Vaedris. You think to bargain with me while your own ally slaughters cities. I could not buy my own life for the cost of allowing Jinzan Feyre a free hand to finish what Lorimar could not. You think to use me, but I am a sword with a blade for a hilt. You invite your doom." Lady Skull leapt to her feet, knocking over her chair. She seethed through bared teeth. She barked an order in Keshi, but Brannis understood it well enough. He dodged aside and heard a crackling thunder of uncounted muskets firing. The shots pelted him like hailstones.
"Kenethio Mandraxe," Lady Skull shouted, words Brannis understood all too well.
From Lady Skull's crossed palms, a bolt of ether lanced out, strong enough to take Brannis from his feet. Brannis scrambled across the floor, gouging crevices with avalanche in his careless haste. As he fled into the corridor, he held the blade to his side, allowing it to drag through the great chamber's wall. Down the halls he ran, trailing rock wall the whole way. The keep shook. Brannis was no architect,
but he could only surmise that those walls were integral to the keep's integrity. Soria's map floated in his thoughts. The kitchens, the servants' quarters, the rearmost towers. Anything but those. He heard crashes behind him as sections of the upper floors shifted and gave way. He rounded a corner, taking another side of the grand chamber to ruin. The floor beneath his feet rocked, some great portion of the keep having fallen, causing the whole of it to shudder. Brannis took Avalanche from the wall. It was no use leveling the keep while he was still within. He had come around to the rear of the building. There was an exit there. It was time to discover if he had bought Soria and Rakashi enough time for their missions. Soria felt the keep shake in earnest, and knew that Brannis was done with parley. With only her own safety to worry about, she hopped away from the wall and released the rope. Soria hit the ground with the force of a lighting sparrow, a pace or two from Abile's body. Thomas was already rushing over.
"Abile! Abile!"
he shouted, heedless of the accepted decorum of diversion-based escapes, his own safety, and the bit of magic that had just been worked in front of his oblivious eyes. Abile moaned.
"She lives!"
Soria was shocked. She pushed Thomas back as he arrived. The well-meaning ministrations of an overzealous lover were more likely to further harm the girl than help her. Soria knelt over the peasant girl and felt at the back of her neck for broken bones, then felt around her head for blood. All she noticed, though, was a thin, wispy line of smoke trailing up from the jade dragon pendant she wore. The poor little deer was scorched, its fire burnt out, the one magic it held expended.
"What happened?"
Soria asked, turning to Thomas.
"There was a flash of green all around, just before she hit the ground," Thomas said. "You must have imagined..."
"No, it was magic," Thomas insisted. "My father told me about it, showed me a bit himself. He must have given Abile that pendant for this sort of emergency."
Soria knew better. She also knew that Abile had never told Thomas who had really given her the pendant. The ground shook once more. Soria took a look back to the keep. Its years of patient service to Kesh, and whatever lamb came before it, seemed at an end. She saw Rakashi emerge from around a corner, his half-blade sheathed at his back and a large bundle slung over one shoulder.
"What happened?"
Rakashi shouted as he approached.
"Where's Brannis?"
Soria yelled back.
"Still inside. Can you not hear him?"
Rakashi lowered his voice as he drew near.
"Now what happened to the girl?"
Abile stirred.
"She fell. Couldn't hold on while I carried her,"
Soria said. She backed away and took the bundle from Rakashi. The Takalish warrior scholar was far more knowledgeable about anatomy and medicine. Beyond telling that the girl had not broken her neck or split her skull, Soria was unsure of the extent of her injuries. Rakashi bent low to examine Abile. He put two fingers to the side of her throat and held them there a moment. With his thumb, he pushed her right eyelid back, looking into her eye. Then he took a shoulder and turned her just a bit. He reached beneath her and felt along the backs of her ribs. He repeated the process on the other side, then checked her arms and legs for breaks.
"Hey!"
Brennus's voice shouted. He was running from the direction Rakashi had come.
"We're all out! Get clear!"
Rakashi nodded to Soria, then turned to Thomas.
"Help me carry her. Be gentle."
The two men hoisted Abile and carried her away from the keep. Soria brought the bundle and followed. She watched as Brannis approached the corner of one tower. He steadied himself as for a foot race, blade held to the side. At a run, he slid the sword along the walls of the keep at shoulder height. He traced the entire length of one side, slicing the building like a sack, rock spilling out in place of grain. He sprinted out of the way as the keep collapsed, walls caving in and towers toppling.
"None of the survivors should be too interested in pursuing us now after seeing that," Brannis remarked.
As the wind carried off the dust from the devastation, less than half the keep remained standing. It was a sudden ruin, desolate under the pale moonlight.
"Let's get out of here,"
Soria said. Brannis took Abile, cradled in his arms. He had not asked about her injuries, simply accepting that she needed to be carried. When he looked down at her,
Soria knew he could not help but notice the pendant. But of all the looks she saw there on his face, she never saw the look he saved for her. For Soria, that made the whole of their expedition worth the effort.